Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We must explore how we can get the population of Rikers to be so small that the dream of shutting it down becomes a reality.
And that was New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito with the attention grabber from her annual State of the City address on Thursday. And on Sunday, listen to who sounded supportive.
Rikers is a big problem. And the council president, when she talks about closing Rikers, that's a big solution. And you only solve a big problem with a big solution.
Governor Cuomo there, obviously, and Speaker Mark-Viverito joins me now herself to tell us more about how she envisions actually closing Rikers Island and her broader vision for criminal and social justice reform in the city. Welcome back to WNYC, Madam Speaker.
Thank you, Brian. A pleasure to be here.
First, why close Rikers? Does the facility itself matter as opposed to the way inmates are treated at whatever location?
Well, I think this is a larger conversation, which I have made a priority of my leadership in the council, which is about criminal justice reform in general and how do we create more fairness in general. Along that conversation, we've been talking about low-level nonviolent offenses, making the punishment fit the crime. People should not be incarcerated. People should not be having permanent criminal records for low-level nonviolent offenses. That would reduce number of people at Rikers. We've talked about a bail fund. There are people literally 8 to 10 days in Rikers because they cannot pay a $200, $500 bail because they're poor. That's unfairness. We're about to roll out very shortly the bail fund that would, again, reduce numbers of people that are at Rikers. So when you start taking all these measures of creating greater equality within the criminal justice reform system, you're downsizing, you're minimizing the number of people at this facility, which, yes, is outdated, which, yes, now we have some level of federal oversight because of the consistent patterns over the years. Again, these are issues that were there prior to this current administration. I want to make sure that that's noted. So then when you start making these kinds of adjustments, you will be at a point where maybe the population is so small that you can really look at community-based approaches as the real solution, which have proven to be more effective. Now, we don't have all the answers at the moment. That is why I said we were going to convene this independent commission, which will be led by Judge Lipman, who is highly respected in the issue of criminal justice reform in general.
He was the chief judge of New York State, and he just retired because he reached the age limit of 70.
Right. And when we called him, he was more than happy to partner with us. So, you know, there's been a lot of conversations over the years about shutting down Rikers, about looking at more community-based solutions, at alternatives to incarceration. So all of that will be part of the work scope that Judge Lipman will have before him, and it will be with people at the table representing all sectors. So this is ambitious, understood. I happen to be a big thinker. I like to think about taking on challenges that are ones that will bring more equity to our city, and this is one of them. And I know that some people consider it controversial. I don't think it is. I think engaging in a very thorough debate about something that's been out there in the public sphere is something that we have a responsibility to do.
And listeners, we can take some phone calls for New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito on the idea of closing Rikers Island and replacing it with 5 borough jails or other criminal justice reform issues. We'll get to some others from her State of the City address from last week, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Well, this is a controversial idea to the police and corrections officers unions, who don't seem to like it. They ask where the people now in Rikers will be going. Here's the corrections officers union leader, Norman Seabrook, reacting to your speech.
Because at the end of the day, where do you put these individuals that continue to commit crimes? If you want them on 65th and Park Avenue, hell, I'm for it. But where are you going to put these jails? You're going to put them right here in the South Bronx where we're at. You're going to put them right there in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn. You're not putting them on Wall Street.
Your answer to Norman Seabrook?
Well, I mean, that's another conversation. One, there are some existing facilities that have not been in use for a while. That's something that can be looked at. The other aspect of my speech that I did talk about was about fair share siting. We do know, and I represent one of those communities, that get overburdened by city services and one type
Bronx,
of another.
Correct. South Bronx and East Harlem.
And East Harlem.
For people who don't know your district.
Right. Heavy city services. And so we have been overburdened. So we understand. So the conversation of overhauling our fair share laws and making it more equitable, that every neighborhood and every part of the city needs to have a responsibility to those in need in our city, I think is something. So again, this is going to receive some pushback. It is not something that's going to happen overnight. It is a process. We have to arrive at it. But again, as I said, clearly, you know, the idea here is to get the population so small that we could get to a community-based approach, which is much more holistic. It's much more visionary. It's much more sound. And I think that that's the way we got to look at it when we look at public policy in the city of New York.
Is it doable politically? Can you get fair share siting, one in each borough, for something as undesirable as a jail? Seabrook was saying, well, you're not going to get it on 65th and Park Avenue. You're not going to get it on Wall Street. Can you achieve fair share siting when people with a lot of political clout will say, not in my backyard?
I mean, I think that's a conversation. And again, I want to talk about the fair share laws, and that needs to be looked at. And so I think the conversation, and this has come up with this whole current homelessness crisis we have, that there are neighborhoods, and to me it's really unconscionable, that are saying that families and children in need that need some type of housing, well, we don't want those facilities in our communities. That conversation is happening always, and it continues to happen to this day. So we have to have a really frank conversation about the responsibility we all bear to really provide for everyone in this city. It's not just up to certain communities to do that. And I think that that's a tough conversation to have, but it's a conversation that if there's a political will to engage in it, that we can do it.
Let's take a phone call. Catherine in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Catherine.
Good morning. You know what I'd really like to see? You talk about closing Rikers. We have friends who have sons who are incarcerated. They're from New York City, and they have to go visit them in Buffalo and Albany. And these are not people of means, and they don't have time. And I'd rather see that if we're, instead of closing Rikers, that we offer a closer option for people who've been in prison, who are from New York City, and Rikers could work for that. It's just really you want these individuals to have family support, and when you put it so that when they do come out, they have these relationships. And when you put that so far away, it's really difficult.
That's an interesting thing to bring into this conversation. And
yes,
for people who don't know how it works, Rikers is a jail, which means it's for people who've been charged, primarily for people who've been charged but not yet convicted. The prison, as opposed to a jail, is at the state level, the prison systems with these large prison facilities, which mostly are hours of car rides or bus rides away from the city. And I'm sure you know, Speaker, that the buses that line up at Columbus Circle on Friday night take people up to, hours and hours away to visit their loved ones who are in state prisons. Mm-hmm. Could you see using Rikers, converting it from a jail to a prison for precisely that reason?
Well, I mean, again, I think the commission will explore every option. One of the realities also with Rikers right now is that right now we spend about $25 million a year as a city to transport the prisoners at Rikers to court dates or whatever it may be. That's a lot of money. It also takes a long time for family members who want to visit someone at Rikers. It could take them the whole day, the processing, the getting there, et cetera. One of the things I also proposed in the speech was the idea of a video visitation program that allows a connection, right? We need to really not stop dehumanizing the individuals that are at Rikers, because as you said, majority of them are convicted, not charged. And how do we make and provide opportunities to be able to have them integrate successfully back into our communities and contribute positively? We don't want to alienate them and isolate them to the point, where they're now we have to assume a greater responsibility as a city. one, in keeping them warehoused, quote unquote, but also in terms of not being able to become productive citizens. And so the idea of video visitation and allowing for a level of connection, there are people at Rikers who are family, who have families, who have children, being able to read to their children through a video visitation program can maintain some sort of connection to your community. And we also talked about a division of transitional services that will engage those people that are at Rikers to be able to get computer classes, GED classes, and integrate successfully back into our communities with skills where they could be employed. So, you know, it really is trying to look at the individuals at Rikers in more of a humane way. And obviously those that are criminals and those that have committed a crime and convicted of a crime, we have to deal with it in that setting. But I think that there's things here that we can do to be a little bit more humane about this approach and at the end of the day, be able to reintegrate individuals into our society that can contribute.
Ed in Queens, you're on WNYC with New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing? And how you doing, Council Speaker?
Hi.
Basically, you touched on it. I just wanted to say, as a formerly incarcerated person, we need more community outreach. We need places for individuals after they have served their time, even being on Rikers Island, a short sentence most of the time because it is a city jail. We need places for them to land. A lot of times, this bus drops these guys off by Queensbridge or somewhere in Manhattan, and they're just lost. They have no connection to civil services. Some of them have mental problems, male and female, that need to be addressed. And Rikers Island has become a dumping ground. And what we need a more humane approach. Mm-hmm. We need a more civic-minded approach. Because like you said, these people are coming back into the community, and they're going to be a burden unless we address this as intelligent human beings.
Exactly.
So I salute you. I mean, I hope that this effort or initiative is more than just talking to political means, and it really something comes out of it.
Thank you so much. I mean, you're touching right on the point, and I appreciate that because we need more sanity in this conversation sometimes. And again, I think it's the same challenges we see in the conversation about homelessness, right? How people that are a situation which any of us could find ourselves in are dehumanized, and we lose that aspect of really seeing this person for who he or she is. And I think that that's not the world I want to live in. Obviously, there are those who commit crimes, who are accused, and then who are convicted, and we have to deal with that. And this is not in any way being lax on that. It is also looking at a different approach because the way we've been doing it has been so inefficient and ineffective that this is a conversation that, great, I'm glad we're doing it at a local level. We have been hearing some of this conversation at a national level, too. These are national laws that have to be changed, national policies that have to be changed. So there's a lot of work we have to do. But if New York City can kind of step up to the plate and be some sort of take the lead on this and be some sort of an example, then I welcome that. And I'm more than happy to take whatever criticism comes with it because we can definitely push back on that.
So here's a scenario. Let's say you do succeed in closing Rikers Island. A few years ago, an independent urban planner named Jim Valenti got a little bit of press for floating an idea that Rikers be closed and used as an expansion area for LaGuardia Airport because, as you know, it desperately needs more space for the 21st century. The governor has put out a design competition for a new LaGuardia Airport. Remember, Joe Biden called it Third World or whatever he called it. And everybody agrees we need a better and bigger LaGuardia Airport. There's only so much real estate in New York, and Rikers is right there. I don't know if you've ever heard of this plan even, but do you have any initial reaction to whether that could be a conceivable use of that land?
That's way too ahead of myself here or ahead of the commission. I've not heard of that idea. And I think at the end of the day, what we're looking to do and the vision of this work with Judge Lipman is to take a comprehensive, holistic look at the way that we are providing or the way we are doing criminal justice reform in the city and figuring out ways that it can be much more effective and efficient and fair because it'll make us a better city. So whatever happens at the end of the day, if we have achieved that goal, I'll leave that up to the urban planners.
And funny enough, the reaction to him at the time was generally, oh, really interesting idea for LaGuardia, but nobody's ever going to close Rikers Island. Ha, ha, ha.
Exactly. Well, look where we find ourselves.
So how long do you think it could take, conceivably, at the minimum, if, and we already have the governor responding positively to your plan, and I think politically that's a big deal. So how quickly, conceivably, could Rikers be closed?
I mean, that again, that, the commission has to be convened. I spoke to Judge Lippman on Friday, thanked him so much for being a partner. The next step is to meet with him and start laying out exactly what the mission and the vision of the commission will be, who's going to be at the table in the conversations, what is going to be the analysis that will be provided. So that's going to take time. And then once we, whatever blueprint is achieved and arrived at, then you have to implement it. And that's not going to, that's nothing that would happen anytime soon. So this is definitely something that is kind of in the future. It's a vision that's being laid out. My hope is that we can get to a point where we arrive at that blueprint and then we can start getting the buy-in to enact it.
All right. We have a few minutes left. Sure. Let me touch on a couple of other issues from the State of Your City speech and other things going on around the city. You addressed the homelessness crisis, calling for more funding for formerly homeless people. As you know, the annual hope count of street homeless happened last week. To what extent is that a good indicator of the extent of the problem? I think it found like 3,000-4,000 people actually sleeping out, which is about what they found in recent years.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is a federally mandated count that has to happen. It's something that the city has to do. Obviously, those that are street homeless, those that are out there, there's constant engagement. I went out that night with the Secretary of HUD, with the mayor, and we did find, it was a very cold night, and we did find people out on the street. These are people that need a serious attention and outreach. And the effort that the mayor has laid out, which I think is great, about these outreach teams constantly coming back and touching those that are out in the street to provide them with services is very helpful. So I think we want to continue to work in partnership with the mayor to really figure out a more comprehensive and holistic approach to homelessness. I think it's always about out of sight, out of mind. That is not an effective approach to homelessness. We really have to try to figure out to get at the root of the problem. And I believe that what the policy changes the administration is laying out, and we will continue to provide oversight, is heading us in a different direction. I did say also that we need to look at a permanent rental subsidy program. I think that's something that we should be bold about as a city and should do. That is a way that we can really try to get more buy-in from the landlords, who having a one-year, two-year rental subsidy may not be appealing. Obviously, I think it's unrealistic to expect people that have been kind of in and out of shelters to be able to transition successfully out of a rental subsidy program after 2 years. So looking at a permanent subsidy program is something that I think we should look at.
How expensive would that be?
It would be something we would have to look at. I mean, we obviously have the federal Section 8, which is a permanent subsidy. We have to figure out a ways that we can maybe model something more at the local level to lead to more positive results.
Is it a presidential campaign issue? It's not been, you know, since the Reagan years, the federal government has been kind of getting out of housing policy to an increasing degree. It's not something that I've heard even from Clinton or Sanders. Maybe they've said it and I've missed it. Do you think there's a presidential campaign position on urban housing, including homeless, formerly homeless housing?
I think it should. I mean, clearly,
what would it be at the presidential level?
I mean, look, we have not been able to open our Section 8 waiting lists forever, right? Because there's not enough money that is being put towards it. So there has to be more of an investment. When we think about the amount of money that we are spending in our homelessness system, it is more cost efficient to be able to put somebody in permanent housing. It's much more cost efficient, right? That's why the idea of a permanent rental subsidy and looking at the value that would bring to us is important, not only financially in the bottom line. We've got to look at the, you know, the positive aspects of the help it would provide to these families and these individuals. So that's something that, but I would like to hear more of that kind of a vision and urban agenda in this campaign.
Give us the latest on the council's position on the mayor's rezoning plans, mm-hmm. which went through 2 days of contentious hearings last week. As you know, there's strong support, there's strong resistance in different groups. Your district in East Harlem is one of the ones targeted for rezoning, but it's come up with its own plan, I understand, at the community level. How would you like for all this to be handled?
Oh, my God. It's complicated, and I know that there's a lot of frustration out there. We are taking our job very seriously. We have to vote on a plan, whether supportive or rejected. I believe that we, vision-wise and philosophy-wise, that we are on the same page with the mayor. We have basically looked very thoroughly, and our land use division staff has been wonderful of really pulling all of the concerns from every community board, from every borough board, all the borough presidents, and we're taking a look at that aggressively to figure out how can we arrive at a point where we try to address as many of the concerns. We're not going to meet every single concern. That's the reality of the life we live as elected officials. We have to arrive at a point where we think that the benefit outweighs, you know, the negative. And so we'll get to a point where after the hearings and processing that feedback, we only have 50 days to make a decision. So we have a small window, and we could over deliberate this to death, but we have to just process, analyze it, and then come to a point, push and figure out what changes we can get, and figure out if that's where we can come to an agreement.
Is the key to a compromise, do you think, something like allowing a lot more building with, you know, 75-25 or 70-30, so that would still mean 70-75% market rate housing going up in your district and elsewhere, as long as the set-aside 25% or 30% is for low enough incomes?
Right. I think that's been a lot of the challenge of the deeper affordability is what people want to see, and I would agree we want to see that. Right now, if we do nothing, then people have, and developers and owners have the right to build as of right with absolutely no affordable housing. That has to be understood. So this concept of doing nothing does not solve our problem. It's just going to create more of a challenge for our already the tension that already exists at our local level communities. So we have to figure out how we utilize the resources the city has at its disposal to create some public benefit, and that's zoning at this point. So the deeper affordability, I think, is really at the heart of this, and that's where we're going to start figuring out how far we can push.
Last question. Do you think there's a New York implication of this new battle in Washington over replacing Justice Scalia? If they delay that for a year, are there, for, you know, you and your role as council speaker in New York City, are there urban implications?
I mean, I think we have to be concerned, right, about the Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court of the United States, and we have to make sure that it's fully functional, and the president has every right to fulfill his constitutional role. Yes, whatever decisions come down from the court will have a bearing on New York City. It can have a bearing on New York State. So it really is incumbent upon us to make sure that the president, who is our president for another full year, pretty much, have the ability to fulfill his function. And I think that the Republicans are making up facts. They're not facts. They're making it up as they go along, and it's going to fall on deaf ears.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito,
thank you so much. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the well-known political cartoonist Ted Rall. His new book is called Bernie. Guess who it's about? Stay with us.